Although China maintains a Coast Guard presence, there's nothing physically on these rocks.
More questions about Chinese activity in the South China Sea. It's Friday, March 24th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you as well to join us online right now on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China shows up for a parade in Pakistan. When will the U.S. and Chinese presidents meet? A sunken ferry returns to the surface. Exactly what are the best foods to eat? We serve it up right now on VOA Asia. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte said Thursday he has been assured by China that it is building nothing on the contested Scarborough Shoal in the South China Sea, about 230 kilometers off of his country's main island of Luzon, and he had a message for Beijing.
I was informed that they're not going to build anything sa Panatag out of respect for our friendship. We do not share the American ambition or the aspiration to be the police of the world. I said, I just want to trade with you and I want business because my country needs the money.
A Chinese foreign ministry spokeswoman on Wednesday said reports the Chinese were constructing a monitoring station were mistaken and not true. The rocky outcrop, claimed by both countries, has been a rich fishing ground for Filipinos until it was seized by China in 2012. University of New South Wales Professor Emeritus Carl Thayer tells VOA's Victor Beatty, Manila became alarmed after an official Chinese publication, the Hainan Daily, quoted the senior official of Sansha City as saying preparatory work on the station was among the government's top priorities this year.
The Philippines was approaching this issue, I think, reacting to previous Chinese steps at militarization of its already occupied features. And then the recent visit of an oceanographic ship through Benham Rise, which raised their hackles. But this particular thing seems to be a non-starter.
Would such an environmental monitoring station be considered a security threat?
Well, it would be the first step. In other words, one Scarborough Shoal is unoccupied. The 2002 Declaration on Conduct of Party states that states should refrain from, among other things, occupying unoccupied reef shoals, islets, etc. And that was repeated last year in statements between ASEAN and China. So although China maintains a Coast Guard presence, there's nothing physically on these rocks, and that's what Scarborough Shoal is, a rock. And so putting a monitoring station, which would require people to repair it and look after it, would be seen as the first step towards further occupation by China. China always then says it has to defend its features. It would be crossing a red line.
Didn't a UN arbitral panel last year rule that the Philippines was basically in control of Scarborough Shoal, or at least it should not be part of the South China Sea claim of China?
Well, it made the ruling that China did not have an exclusive claim to Scarborough Shoal as a traditional fishing ground. It found that the Filipinos and other nations also use Scarborough Shoal as a fishing ground. It ruled that it was a rock. So it's a question of sovereignty. Who actually owns that rock is left up in the air. But in the arbitral tribunal could not even consider questions of sovereignty. It's a question of access to it and whether it's a traditional fishing ground. And the Philippines, under Duterte, immediately said they wouldn't press China on this. And Duterte came up with an idea of a marine ecological park, but China's noncommittal. That would be indicating Philippine sovereignty. So things are pretty much at a stalemate in the sense that we're getting reports of Filipino fishermen allowed to fish in the waters around Scarborough Shoal rather than inside, although I've heard a contradictory report that indicates in the last week or so maybe some Filipino boats have been allowed in, but I think they're very speculative.
Carl Thayer, however, said China has built airstrips, hangars, and deployed weapon systems on several islets and reefs in the contested Spratly Archipelago. Satellite imagery suggests China has deployed high-altitude air defense missiles, which could be a prelude to declaring an air defense identification zone as it did in the East China Sea. As the story develops, read more by following our VOA Asia page on Facebook and voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia stories that are trending on voanews.com. Duterte wants impeachment bids against Philippine vice president stopped. North Korea says Trump is too much like Obama. Taliban retake key district in Afghanistan. Turmoil puts schooling at risk for Afghan children. India doubles maternity leave, but many won't benefit. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA News and VOA Asia Facebook page. VOA Asia continues. A grand annual military parade marking Pakistan's Republic Day has for the first time involved Chinese troops, underscoring Beijing's increasingly strong partnership with Islamabad. The Pakistan military displayed its conventional and nuclear-capable weapons at Thursday's parade in the capital, where security was extremely tight. Authorities blocked cellular phone networks to deter militants who have often used mobile phone signals to trigger bombs. Pakistan Day commemorates March 23, 1940, when a resolution was passed to demand the establishment of a separate homeland to protect Muslims in the then British colony of India.
Long live China-Pakistan friendship. The 90 members Chinese contingent is led by Captain Sun Shixian.
Addressing the nationally televised event, President Mamnoon Hussein thanked China for sending a 90-member contingent of the People's Liberation Army to the parade, saying the Chinese army has never participated in such an event in any other country. In addition to deep defense ties, Beijing is investing more than $50 billion to help build infrastructure projects in Pakistan, with an aim to link China to the Pakistani port of Gwadar on the Arabian Sea. Hussein said the cooperation under the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor underscored strong economic partnership between the two countries and opened doors of development, not only for Pakistan, but for the whole region. Thursday's parade showcased the Nasser missile with a 60-kilometer range. It is capable of carrying Pakistan's tactical nuclear weapons. President Hussein, however, reiterated that Pakistan's nuclear capabilities are meant to ensure regional peace and stability. He said Islamabad is ready for talks with New Delhi on all issues, including Kashmir, but accused India of violating a ceasefire in the divided Himalayan region. A message to Hussein from Indian President Pranab Mukherjee congratulated Pakistan on its Republic Day and said India would build ties with Pakistan in an environment free from terror and violence. Relations between the two nuclear-armed neighbors, who have fought three wars since their independence from Britain in 1947, have lately nosedived over Pakistan's alleged support for anti-India militants. Coming up on VOA Asia, some of the reasons why we're still waiting for details on a U.S.-China presidential summit. Happening now in Asia, U.S. and Afghan officials say they have made a strategic retreat from a district headquarters in southern Helmand province that has been under heavy assault by Taliban forces. But the governor of the embattled province says local forces remain in control of the area. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We always enjoy to have you along with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. There is a building anticipation for a summit between President Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping. Dates in early April at Mr. Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida have emerged in some media reports, but as of now, no firm meeting has been announced. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson met with President Xi in Beijing during his just-concluded trip to Asia. The top U.S. diplomat indicated President Trump is looking forward to President Xi visiting the United States. As we watch developments, VOA Mandarin reporter Li Yuan Lu joins us to explore some of the reasons why details of the visit remain vague.
What I heard has been the two sides are still very actively trying to prepare for this meeting. Obviously, it's important for both sides. But apparently, I think they still have some issues to be worked out. So that's why I think we haven't seen any official announcement. I mean, in fact, I was expecting Secretary Tillerson you know, maybe some announcement might come out during or even right after his visit to China. And so far, this has not been the case. So it tells me that really the two sides are still working on some thorny issues.
Rex Tillerson, of course, brought up North Korea in all of his stops in Asia. But how did his meeting go with Xi Jinping and other Chinese officials?
I think the meeting went really well, especially I think for the Chinese side. What is really noticeable was that Secretary Tillerson really repeated word for word the Chinese version of the, you know, Sino-U.S. relations. As you know, this like non-confrontation, non-conflict, win-win cooperation. It's really rare, I think, you know, for an American official to repeat the Chinese phrase. Mm. In fact, it's seen in China as a big diplomatic victory for China. It doesn't really mean that he endorses Chinese position on this, especially those the words that Secretary Tillerson repeated and the Chinese phrases to describe U.S.-China relations.
Words, of course, are very important, especially between the U.S. and China, how they translate, how they're perceived. We know that Donald Trump spent a lot of time on his campaign before he was president talking about trade and how unfair China was in many different aspects. Very early on, he made a call, or Taiwan made a call to the United States.
The Taiwanese president, Tsai Ing-wen, made a congratulatory call to President-elect Trump. Mm-hmm. And he took the call, which was seen as a major break from the diplomatic protocol.
And, of course, the South China Sea has been a place of contention as many different countries are claiming the same space. And the United States has made some statements by sending warships through occasionally or a plane here or there. And these are all things that complicate the meeting whenever it will be announced. And from what we know, President Xi Jinping is to come to the United States and speak extensively with Donald Trump at his Florida home, Mar-a-Lago.
Right. As you mentioned, obviously all these issues are very difficult issues, you know, between the two countries. I suspect that a trade issue might be one of the things that's kind of preventing the two sides from announcing this upcoming visit, especially for the Chinese side. They don't really want their leader to come here to have a summit with the U.S. president while being embarrassed. And we have seen reports that the United States might do something right after the summit, like might impose some kind of tariffs, raise the tariffs on products. So, you know, there are a lot of things to be worked out. But I do hear, actually, that the Chinese side is asking, you know, the United States maybe to change the venue for the meeting, because, as you know, this news, I mean, the information has been leaked out way before this has been finalized. Here, right here in the United States, you have a different elements who are going to be there to protest. I mean, this is nothing new, but because this has been out in the open, I even heard that because there's only one way from the airport to Mar-a-Lago, and that made the security arrangements even more challenging. That's one of the things that the Chinese side doesn't really want to see, right? You have a lot of Chinese protesters going there.
Whenever this is announced and we have some more concrete plans, perhaps we'll speak with you again. Li Wan Lu from our Mandarin service, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Police in India have arrested 8 suspected bone smugglers in the state of West Bengal after 365 bones were discovered in a village. The bones were found in Burdwan district. They're believed to have been taken from decomposing bodies found in the state's rivers. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, an extensive South Korean salvage operation Thursday successfully raised the Sewol ferry, which capsized nearly 3 years ago, killing over 300 passengers, many of them high school students.
새벽 4시 47분.
Lee Chul-jo, an official in charge of salvage operations with the Ministry of Oceans and Fisheries, says at 4:47 a.m., we lifted the ferry 22 meters and the entire body of the vessel started to show for the first time above the surface. He says the recovered vessel will soon be moved to the nearby port on a mainland. He says we are calculating it will take about 12 to 13 days to move the ferry to dry dock. A Chinese salvage company fitted 33 beams beneath the hull and used 66 hydraulic jacks to raise the hull of the ship, which was laying on its left side at a depth of 40 meters below the sea. The recovered vessel will soon be moved to the nearby port of Mokpo on the mainland. Families of the Sewol victims have been calling for the ship to be raised and for a more thorough investigation into the disaster. They also want more government transparency and participation by opposition parties and victims' families in the investigation process. The sinking of the Sewol ferry on April 16, 2014, in the Yellow Sea near the southeastern island of Jindo triggered national outrage. The deadly accident was later determined to be caused in part by greed, incompetence, and negligence. The ferry on that day carried 476 passengers, and it was dangerously overloaded. Salvage efforts to recover the ferry had been delayed in part because of rough conditions at sea, and it was complicated by requirements set to bring up the vessel intact to aid in the investigation and to preserve any bodies that may still be on board. 9 victims are still unaccounted for. Many of the 250 teenagers died while on a school trip. They were instructed by crew members to remain in their cabin, even as the crew abandoned ship. The ship's captain, Lee Jun-suk, who also abandoned ship, was later convicted of gross negligence. He was sentenced to life in prison, while 14 other crew members were sentenced up to 12 years in prison for abandonment and violating maritime law. The South Korean Coast Guard's slow and indecisive rescue efforts also came under criticism. Officers later claimed they lacked the proper training and equipment to mount such a large-scale rescue effort at sea. Public confidence in the government of then-President Park Geun-hye plummeted, and it never recovered because of her perceived inefficient management of the crisis and her own mysterious disappearance when she made no public statement or appearance for 7 hours while the ferry was sinking. Our thanks to Seoul correspondent Brian Padden and Yumi Kim for sending us that story. Developing at this hour in Asia, the appointment of a polarizing Hindu religious leader as chief minister of India's most populous state with almost 40 million Muslims has raised concerns about the country's direction under Prime Minister Narendra Modi's party. The religious leader is known for provocative rhetoric against Muslims. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, it's no secret. Some of the foods Americans love the most and are being increasingly enjoyed in Asia are the worst for them. They include sugary drinks, salty food, processed meat. A new study says eating too much of these foods and not enough nutritious food contributes to nearly half of the U.S. heart deaths. VOA's Deborah Block tells us what the report says people should be eating.
Americans are not eating enough healthy foods to increase their chances of living longer. That's the message of a study by Tufts University, which includes national surveys about people's eating habits. Those surveys found that most Americans did not eat the recommended amounts of good foods, like fruit and vegetables, seafood, whole grains, and nuts and seeds. Nuts, for example, contain healthy fats that can help raise good cholesterol levels. A lack of these foods accelerates cardiometabolic problems, stroke, diabetes, or heart disease, says Noah Mueller, a health researcher at Johns Hopkins University.
Diet does contribute a significant proportion of, but does contribute significantly to the overall proportion of cardiometabolic disease deaths. And a significant proportion can be reduced or avoided if we increase our intake of certain food groups, which can fall into a dietary pattern.
And that means eating less of the bad foods, such as processed meat, red meat, sugary drinks, and salty foods. Mueller says eating too much processed meat raises unhealthy cholesterol levels. Sugary drinks may lead to diabetes, while excessive salt increases blood pressure.
The highest proportion of deaths was due to high sodium intake, also high sugar-sweetened beverage intake, high intake of processed meats, and low intake of nuts and seeds.
He says people can increase their chances of living longer by eating the right foods.
If we lower our intake of sodium through reduction of processed foods, which contribute about 80% of our sodium intake in the U.S., we can see improvements in cardiometabolic health, including reductions in the number of deaths that are due to cardiometabolic disease.
The study says public health policies targeting unhealthy eating may help prevent some deaths. But ultimately, it's up to people to think about what they put in their mouths. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
There are so many great stories like that one each day. Sometimes, you know, it's a tough choice what to present on VOA Asia. So we're beginning to develop some new programs. Tell us what you would like to hear. You can contact us in a variety of ways. One of the easiest ways to do it is on Facebook. Send us a message. Tell us what you like, what you might want to like to hear. And we'll take your ideas into consideration and maybe even produce a program based on what you tell us. Write to us. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Again, check us out on Facebook at VOA Asia. You know, we're also a podcast. You can download VOA Asia. Take us wherever you go. Our director is Tracy Carter. Engineer Carl Starling. Our managing editor is Diane Gao. And our great VOA Asia team includes Steve Miller and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On his recent trip to China, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said it is important that the leaders of our two countries engage in further dialogue to develop a common understanding that will guide our relationship for the next half century. The United States and China, he added, are the world's two largest economies, and we must both promote stability and growth. Our two countries should have a positive trading relationship that is fair and pays dividends both ways, and we will be working on that going forth. Secretary Tillerson discussed the importance of safeguarding stability and security in Northeast Asia and the Asia-Pacific region. We noted that efforts made over the last 20 years have so far not succeeded in curbing the threat posed by North Korea's illegal weapons programs, said Mr. Tillerson. Because China's stated policy is denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, we renewed our determination to work together to convince the North Korean government to choose a better path and a different future for its people. Secretary Tillerson stressed the importance of upholding a rules-based order in dealing with maritime disputes in the South China Sea and freedom of navigation and overflight. He also made clear that the United States will continue to advocate for universal values, such as human rights and religious freedom, for the Chinese people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.